Yes. So go ahead, David. I understand that there might have been some questions that I might be able to help with.
Okay, so this is Richard Carter. Is Richard Carter the COVID czar? Yes. Okay. One of the questions here, the last question that has been posed is, how much more specific can we be about what will trigger stage three? You say large clusters. That is what I see here from an old, something that was in the newspaper a few days ago. So what will trigger that?
Okay, so we have had some discussions in the Health Emergency Operations Center, which is the body that is currently charged with the responsibility for providing public health advice to the Augmented National Security Council. Basically, this is the nerve center of public health information that we take our advice from. The decision has been made in order to be even more aggressive than we have been, that at the point that we identify a case that is a tertiary contact, in other words, this is somebody who has contracted the virus from someone who is a secondary contact. So you have your index case and then somebody that got infected from that index case. So from the point that you have a tertiary contact, that could trigger stage three.
Only one,
because what that means is that you are now moving to a situation where you have moved beyond the ability to identify the direct link between someone who was imported, and this is transmission now beyond that immediate link. So, as I said, the decision has been taken by our public health authorities that we need to be even more aggressive than we might otherwise have been, just because we want to get ahead of and maintain a serious grip on this. The second thing that could trigger a stage three is if we identify a case in the population that we are unable to trace where that person might have been infected. So as it stands right now, we are tracking all of the contacts that we've been able to identify. But if a case turns up tomorrow that we have no link or no way of identifying how that person got infected, it means that we have community spread that we cannot identify the link to. And we have said either of these two conditions will trigger a stage three response. What we have said, however, is that we will calibrate the stage three response based on the advice of the public health officials. But the whole thinking is let us get ahead of this disease as quickly as we possibly can, and let us ensure that we minimize the possibility of it getting to a point where it begins to overwhelm the healthcare system. If we need to be even more aggressive than other countries have been in terms of where they are in the number of cases, let us do that. Let us adopt a no-regrets approach in order to protect public health.
A no-regrets approach meaning?
A no-regrets approach meaning that we take the decisions which, in the advice of public health, we need to do, understanding that those decisions may involve inconvenience, may involve additional expense, but we take those decisions because we consider them necessary in order to protect public health. So, for example, the Prime Minister has announced that we are seeking to get as much as 100,000 test kits. Now, that would be equivalent to one-third of the population of Barbados, roughly speaking. Now, we are not anticipating that one-third of the population will get sick, but we are doing it to ensure that if we absolutely need it, then we have it. So the approach is better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
Explain this quarantine process over a 14-day period. And how can this be policed?
So quarantine is where an individual may have been exposed but has no symptoms. And during that, the 14 days is identified because that essentially is the incubation period for the virus. And the
I think I'm speaking more specifically to people coming into the country.
So the policy decision was made by the government of Barbados that anyone arriving in Barbados, coming from continental Europe, the UK, the USA, in addition to the four countries that had previously been identified, will be required to go into quarantine. The quarantine can be at a designated facility, so it may be a visitor who is going to a hotel, for example. The quarantine can be in your own home, so it may be Barbadians who are returning home who can self-quarantine at home, or it may be individuals who are transiting, and if the individuals are transiting for a longer period of time than is convenient to be held at the airport, they will be required to go into quarantine until such time as they transit.
But the question of being able to enforce that, assuming that you say going to self-quarantine, we had somebody call here and say they overheard somebody in a supermarket saying they only got 7 more days to go in their quarantine, but they were out in the supermarket already. How do we police that?
Yes, so there is, and this has happened almost everywhere, there is, there always will be people who will disobey instructions. There are people who will not comply with instructions that are given, will not comply with public health requirements. Those people are obviously selfish people who are thinking of themselves and endangering or putting the health of the rest of the population at risk. The government of Barbados, as other governments, do have the authority and the power that if persons refuse to comply with the requirements of quarantine, then those persons can be compelled to be in quarantine. So it can be mandatory, enforced, policed quarantine.
And talk to us about the scenario where there are other countries in the Caribbean that have closed their borders. Where is Barbados? What position are we left in if their own citizens are basically locked out of their borders? Can they do that? And can that impose a responsibility on Barbados? Because I think there's some story floating around. I couldn't verify it because I know that social media can sometimes put up some information there. You could tell me whether it's real true or not about some people from Trinidad who might have had to be accommodated in Barbados because Trinidad's borders are closed. Is that fact or fiction?
So I can't speak to the specific issue that has appeared on social media because we are obviously a government that has said to the people of Barbados that we will deal with the fact. I do not have the facts at my disposal, and therefore I can't speak to a story that is on social media. What I can say, however, is that any citizen of any country that is arriving through those ports of origin that I just identified, those citizens will be required to go into quarantine. Now, if a citizen arrives in Barbados and they are intending for onward travel and they cannot get to that onward travel by reason of either unavailability of carrier or because the borders of that country are closed. Now, I can't speak to other countries' decisions in relation to closure of their borders. But what I can say is that anybody who arrives in Barbados traveling from those points of origin will be required to be quarantined as long as they are in Barbados.
Supermarkets, people lining up outside supermarkets because they are seeking to adhere to this principle of no more than 25 people. Are supermarkets considered essential services in Barbados? Or is it acceptable for us to be following this particular line in circumstances where people see food as essential?
Supermarkets are considered essential services. There is a list of essential services that has been identified even in advance of this exercise because, as you are aware, we prepare every year for hurricane season. The list of essential services has been drawn up. And I know that the intention is to circulate this. Now, this becomes applicable at stage 3. Currently, the government has issued the recommendation. It is not a prohibition at this stage. It is recommendation and advice to restrict your own personal movement as much as possible, particularly if you are in one of those high-risk groups that have been clearly identified, to restrict your movement. The second thing in relation to supermarkets, and some supermarkets have actually attempted to respond to this by providing special hours for persons who are either elderly or who may have a disability. And that is an excellent initiative taken of the initiative by the supermarket concerned, without necessarily being directed by us, because we have not been directive in this regard. The issue of 25 persons, which I've heard being used by a range of bodies and agencies, what has gone out clearly from us by way of communication is that social gatherings, social and recreational gatherings of 25 persons, we are advising against this. Now, obviously, if the supermarket is attempting to protect its own staff and protect members of the public, that is its consumers, the supermarkets can apply, as other agencies have done, can apply basic principles of how it manages the throughput and the inflow of members of the public who are shopping there. And it was never contemplated, nor was it directed, that a supermarket should only have 25 persons within it. Because as a matter of fact, a supermarket may have more than 25 persons in terms of its staff. So that would immediately make a nonsense of a requirement that only 25 persons can be in the building. How a supermarket manages its throughput and the number of persons that it allows into the establishment is at this stage at the discretion of the supermarket, following the basic principles that we've provided to them in relation to managing the numbers of persons that can comfortably be managed in the supermarket. As I understand it, I have not had the opportunity to visit, but some of them have actually marked off spaces in terms of approaching the cashier so that you maintain the distance that is being recommended. There is obviously, as has been circulated, guidance about how individuals can protect their own selves. So if I'm going to the supermarket and I take my own wipes and I make sure I wipe off the trolley, if the supermarket is not doing that, if I make sure that I'm not around people who are coughing or sneezing, if I try to maintain social distance between myself and other persons, working on the assumption that they could have something that I do not want in terms of some infection or virus, then those are the protection measures that an individual takes of their own volition wherever they are, and the supermarkets are no particular exception. But let me emphasize, David, that supermarkets are considered essential services by the government of Barbados.
And therefore, for these purposes, the challenge for them is social distancing.
The challenge for them is social distancing. The challenge for them is to maintain an environment where the staff and their customers feel comfortable. Now, obviously, you do not want a situation where you are operating a business and your staff are so uncomfortable that they are compromising the efficiency of your business and refusing service to people, or alternatively, refusing to go on the job because they consider that the measures that you are taking are inappropriate.
Mr.
So this
Carter,
is a matter for... Yes.
Sorry, you complete the sentence. You say it's a matter for...
So I was saying that it is a matter, obviously, for supermarkets and other business places that are servicing the public to take into consideration the advice that has been given by the public health officials, to take into consideration the concerns that their staff have in relation to their own exposure, and act accordingly.
I'm trying to raise with you some of the questions that have been raised with us. Another concern is the lack of social distancing in the lines outside companies and government departments.
So this is where you are now talking about an individual's responsibility to maintain social distance. So if I am attempting to go into a supermarket and there is a long line, if I know that in order to protect myself, I should keep three 3 feet away from that person, then that is my responsibility to do. If I, so we may reach a stage, I do not know because I cannot predict the future, but we may reach a stage where restrictions and there are prohibitions that are invoked under the emergency powers legislation that reside with the government to legislate and to require this. But what we are asking people to do is to observe the sensible, practical behaviors and advice that has been given. You're lining up to go into the supermarket. Yes, it may be a long line, but maintain your social distance in the same way that we are asking you to maintain your social distance in whatever other form of public engagement that you are having.
Well, I have some other people who want to engage you. We may have to go over a little because you've joined us at the point that you did. And there are so many questions that people have answers to. This person says to me, raise the question of government offices like KIPO, BRA, Licensing Authority. Trinidad has passed the law to extend licenses, etc. This person says, I'm trying to stay at home, but I have an April 1st deadline with KIPO or April 1st deadlines with KIPO for clients who will face $10 per day penalties if they miss the deadline. What's happening in those circumstances? Can you say?
Yeah, so a number of the public sector agencies, and I believe this matter has been addressed by the Prime Minister as well, that those agencies that are able to and that have the facilities for doing so are ramping up the capacity for online payment and online management. Just give me one moment, David, while I try to make myself a little bit more comfortable because I stopped and parked in my car.
No problem. I also want to say to callers, as much as possible between here and when we finish this program, let's take the opportunity of having Mr. Carter on the line to pose your questions. If you have specific concerns and stuff about how we are going about this process, you can raise those questions here during the rest of the program. In other words, it's not so much a question of a program at this point for you to make your statements as much as I want you to raise relevant questions. And the significant point that has come out of this for me so far is that we are one case away from an emergency situation. That's basically what we're hearing here today, huh?
But not just any one case, David.
Not just so any one case. But
no, it is one
it's
case.
It's a tertiary. A tertiary
it is
case.
One case, yes, precisely. Or
one tertiary
a case where
case.
where we cannot identify the contact where that person may have become infected.
Okay. Let's take a call.
All right. So David, just to be clear, I'm able to give you 10 more minutes because
give me
I'm
the
on
10
my
minutes.
Way to
another
meeting.
No problem. Understood. Okay. Thanks for calling, though. Yes, let's take a call. Hello?
Hello.
Afternoon. Yes. Do you have a question?
Well, the question is the whole question of this young people. I heard Cuomo talking about between 18 and 45 that have 47% of the person that age group in the United States who have tested positive. What is the procedure of that in terms of this?
Do you see that applying to Barbados?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Carter, you want to answer that?
The reality is that we are testing persons who are contact irrespective of their age or anything else. So the data that we've been seeing thus far in terms of infection does not correlate with those numbers that are coming out of the USA. But you must understand that we are at the stage, I believe, where we have identified about 17 cases, and you're talking as against a population that may have had 17,000. But we are testing aggressively, and the basic information that has been collected by the World Health Organization from all over the world is that persons who are of a particular age, that is above 70, persons who have existing comorbidities, and that means that they have underlying health conditions such as diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular problems, or problems with cancer, or who are immunocompromised, those persons are at particular risk. The one thing, the additional thing that I want to say is that younger persons tend to get milder forms of the disease, but that is no excuse, obviously, for taking it lightly, because those younger persons interact and engage with all the persons who are in the at-risk group that I just mentioned. So you may be fine in terms of getting a mild form of the disease and treat it lightly, and then go on to infect your parent or grandparent, and then they are exposed to a condition that could cause them severe illness.
Okay, let's take another call. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hello.
Yes, Richard Carter is on the line. Any questions for him?
Am I on the air?
You are.
Okay, David?
Yes.
Okay, I visit the polyclinic, business stop polyclinic on Friday. I went there like from 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Okay, then going on to like minutes 5, I was still there waiting because I had a number, I had 268. And there was a girl in front of me that had a number 261. Okay? But while we were there, there were no room there that we can sit. So we had to sit on the other side, right? So when the numbers called, we could not have heard the numbers. But every minute we were trying to get up to hear who number was calling. Okay, so while we were there sitting, there's this lady that came in. This lady came and rushed up to the window and proceeded to tell the people at the window that she just came in from Air Canada and she due to go back to work tomorrow. The people tell she going to check her status. And while she was checking her status there at the window, telling because we could hear everything there that was going on there, the nurse, the lady at the desk began to ask her a lot of questions, right? And she started to tell the people, you could hear everything, and the woman took out a mask and give her.
Okay.
And while she was at the desk.
This story will take up more than 5 minutes if we continue like this.
Quickly, right?
Do you have a specific question coming out of this, though?
I don't have a question, but I only want to tell you this here quickly, and I can move, because I know it was for quite a long time.
My apologies.
Yes. And while she was there, she was on her phone. I'm talking to her family, and while she was talking to her family, she was there making a lot of laughs.
Okay.
Keep asking, see, they're calling to you yet?
All right, okay. So let's move on. Thank you very much. Let's take another call.
David, I just want to make one comment, though, in relation to what the caller said.
Yes.
And that is, giving someone who is coughing or sneezing a mask is better protection for you than you're wearing the mask.
Okay. It is the person who is coughing or sneezing who needs it. Down to Brass Sacks. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, hello.
Yes, sir. It is me that called earlier, first-time caller.
Yes.
Yeah, I have a situation. I see that a lot of things is happening in the world today, so everybody seems to be on this same topic. And we should be, because it is affecting the situation. Now, I am past 70, and I work most of my time in government, whether it be IDC and Polytechnic and, you know, and Graham Hall. And when it comes to the time now to get some...
You need to get to the point, because I only have a limited time with him. And...
So what I'm asking, I am waiting on the tribunal to hear my case at National Insurance.
So what you want to find out?
So... with everything that is going on now and things like that, and I'm a senior, so I am calling to find out, like, if there's anything that when the tribunal will be called, or if there's anything that they could do for people who are...
Well, we will have to put that particular question to NIS to find out how they are going to work with people like you in the intervening period. So we can't answer the question right now. We could only make note of it and see what they can tell us, all right?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Barbershops, Mr. Carter. Barbershops and hair salons. What's happening there? What are they? This question asks whether they are mandated to close. I don't think that any shop has been mandated to close in Barbados at this stage. That would be triggered, I believe, more so when we reach emergency status, right?
Yes. So there have been no mandated closure of anything in Barbados by the government of Barbados. And in terms of barbershops and so on, one hopes and expects that they would be observing ordinary sanitary procedures in the conduct of their business, because obviously they are doing procedures on on people's head, that some of it which might be invasive in terms of shaving and so on, one would expect that they will be operating reasonable procedures in the ordinary conduct of their business, but there has been no mandated closure of any facility or any business in, or type of business in Barbados.
Okay, one of the questions I have for you has to do with the fact that you've operated in West Africa where there was Ebola. And that has been one of the elements of your credentials in all of this. What differences have you noticed between fighting Ebola and trying to fight the coronavirus here?
There have been a number of differences. Perhaps it is maybe more useful to talk about some of the similarities and some of the usefulness of that experience. One of the obvious things is that communication is important, which is one of the reasons why I've made myself available at a little bit of personal inconvenience, but that doesn't matter, to this program in order to try to continue, because we have been doing it, the process of engaging with the public of Barbados. We have tried to enlist the media, and the media has in the main responded positively to that request for engagement of the public. So one is transparent, upfront communication, and we've tried to do that.
But my question revolves around the differences. My question is about the differences.
The differences are differences in the disease. So first of all, Ebola had a mortality rate when I started my work in Ebola in West Africa, in Sierra Leone, of 80%, which meant that 80 out of every 100 persons or 800 out of every 1,000 persons died. As far as the statistics that we've been able to access and analyze, COVID-19 has a mortality rate of about 5 or at most 10 out of every 100,000. Now, obviously, one death is too many, and one death is exactly what we're working to avoid. A second difference is the difference in terms of the resources that were available. Sierra Leone, for a country of about 7.5 million, had about a dozen ambulances when Ebola broke out. It had less than 1,000 doctors, probably about 400 or 500 doctors. Barbados has more doctors than that, obviously. We have a healthcare system that is, with all of its faults, a healthcare system that is rigorous and has been able to respond to a range of other diseases and infections. We do have in-house capacity to conduct our own testing and to provide the results within a couple of hours, which has allowed us to get on top of this disease.
What about the testing of the health professionals? Is that something that is desirable? Some people think so.
The testing of health professionals would only be indicated if those health professionals are symptomatic or if they've had an exposure. And as health professionals, they are in a position to be able to judge. There's no shortage of the test kits available to test. So if there is a requirement to test health professionals, then they can be tested.
You're suggesting that nationwide, we don't have a shortage?
Nationwide, we do not have a shortage. We currently have, I believe the number I heard at the EOC today was close to 1,000 test kits that are in country with significant numbers on order and on their way.
And that is if you apply only to people who display symptoms.
And so what is also being done is that the emergency operations team at the Ministry of Health is also considering whether or not we need to move to a stage where we conduct broader testing. But there are limitations, even though I just spoke about our capacity to have testing and get the results within a couple of hours. There are physical limitations to the numbers that we can currently test using the methodologies that we are currently employing.
If we employ
broader testing, then that would either require an increase of that capacity, which we obviously cannot do, or a change of the methodology to a test that is perhaps less sensitive, but may give us the global coverage that we may be seeking.
The last question.
And I have 1 minute with you.
The asthmatics, what can you do for them? There's been a concern here.
Yes, so there's a concern with asthmatics, and the Ministry of Health has spoken about this, and their guidance and advice is to call ahead, because if a person is presented with respiratory distress, then obviously the first thing is to do is to protect life. If that person is presenting with respiratory distress, contact the healthcare provider to get advice before you go and present at the facility. The polyclinics and the hospital remain available for the treatment of asthmatics as they remain available for the treatment of the entire range of medical conditions that will require medical intervention, but the advice is to call first.
Thank you, Richard Carter. Thanks for coming at such short notice and just responding to some of these questions. So I certainly hope that we can have something more structured in place going forward so that the many questions that people have over the coming days can be answered by people who are well enough informed on these matters coming from that part of the government unit that is responsible for this particular matter. Thank you all.
Thank you, David, and thank you, Barbadians. Right. And continue to follow the advice that is being given. Continue to trust in the system that has taken us thus far and has the sole and entire interest of protecting the country from this disease. Thank you all.
Thank you all. And thanks to you, Michelle Brathwaite, my technical operator and producer today. And thanks to all of you who participated in this program, asked the questions, and have really helped to share information. Really fantastic the way that you are actually involved in this. For all the negatives that may be brought to the fore from time to time, there is a lot that is positive coming out of this, the way that Barbadians in general terms are responding and recognizing that there is a problem and that we have to work together in trying to deal with it. I'm David Ellis. Do have a great afternoon.